Tom, KO4HKX.
Good afternoon, Mr. Patrick. Very nice to hear you, sir. Oh, been busy running around. I had to go to a doctor's appointment this morning. Turned out all right. Got a nice new doctor. 1,000 times better than the old one. I mean, get to see her, but well worth it. Miss Bernice is doing lousy. Her knee, she just let it go too long, Patrick. I could not make her go to the doctor. And I won't go force her, but buddy, she's on a walker now, and she's hurting. So I don't think it's going to take much persuasion. And I got her in on Friday to see an orthopedic guy, so maybe she'll get a new store-bought knee.
You get some relief from it no matter which way it ends up going. I know how that feels, and hate that she's doing bad. But good to hear that you're doing pretty good.
They're not sure yet. I got to have an ultrasound next Friday, but at any rate, they did another blood test today, and I'll find out later about my kidneys working or not working right. But, I'm just happy to be here. It's a good life for the most part. 84 degrees, and, I was trying to think of some other things I wanted to tell you, and I don't know what it was. You having a good day with your truck?
Billy, tool truck broke down yesterday morning, and I've been out spending money buying parts, rounding them up, trying to fix it.
You mean your business truck?
Yeah.
I thought you said tow truck. Ooh, what do you got to have to fix it?
See, we started with alternator and two batteries, and now we're at the intake air heater and the controller for it and some other little odds and ends that we needed. All together, it's wound up being quite pricey.
Not sound good. Well, why in the world, those two things don't seem related? Why would the alternator go out and then those other things go out? No forstanzi.
Probably the intake air heater shorted out, and when it does, it's a huge draw and over too much load on the alternator, and the batteries were just getting old. I'm not saying that they were just, could have been time for them. So they drained them down where they were dead, and they didn't want to take a charge again, so I just might as well put new ones in instead of fighting it.
It ain't small. I remember seeing the ones on the locomotives. They were 72 volts that my dad drove way back in the day. And then some other big ones that a friend of mine took care of all the microwave towers for Kansas City Southern Railroad, and they used calcium batteries for backup there. They were huge, too. Wow, that stinks. Well, I always looked at batteries as being the internal load, or external load, I guess you would say, for the batteries, or for the alternator. So if the batteries went dead, I don't know if that would be zero resistance then to allow that to overcharge and ruin the alternator by trying to provide the current to that heater. Wow, did the diagnostic show that up?
The computer's not going to tell you that. It's truck's not charging. So you find out, okay, is the alternator putting out? Batteries are weak. So you replace that, and then when we went to put the battery cable back on, we noticed, man, there's a lot of draw there. So we started checking around, and sure enough, we found it.
Here. I took a bunch of grapes. I'm going down and get Bernice another walker. That aluminum one's too heavy. And the daughter's got one of them. It's got a seat on it, no. So I'll be out here quite a bit. Wow. There went a car that was going back and forth towards the double yellow lines, my double yellow lines. Some kid. Anyways, how much current was that drawing? And I presume you're on 24 volts.
Volt system. And that intake air heater alone will draw, you know, a couple hundred amps.
No, I mean, is that something that's on all the time? It doesn't look like you need any intake air heater on in this kind of weather.
No, it's only on cold starts below a certain temperature. And the truck would run without it, but the problem is it's like a wavy spring in between two plates. And if it's shorted out, I don't want it to have burnt in two and fall down in the engine. So that's why the truck is down for that. It could run until wintertime without it, no problem. It's just, I don't want to take a chance of having to put an engine in it.
I should say not. Well, I know you're very well versed in that, Patrick. There's no doubt in my mind you've done it for years. But I ask you these questions only because I'm thoroughly interested. So that's nichrome wire just going across there. To preheat that, and it could be sucked into the intake, like sort of like through a carburetor, you might say.
If you think about where it's at, it's sitting just like, you know, an old spacer plate under a carburetor. That's where it's sitting on the intake. And then you got the intake where it's being forced in from a turbo on a diesel, so you don't have a carburetor. But that's kind of what it looks like and where it would be at.
Yeah, and that's like, I don't know what they do on the diesels. Are probably 14 or 16 to 1 or something like that. It would be a lot of air going through there. Well, I think that's a wise decision to replace that sucker. So that helps you on cold days for cold starts, or is that just cold starts in general?
It uses the ambient air temperature sensor to decide if it needs it or not. So it doesn't come on all the time. The problem with this one is it was staying on all the time, even with the switch off. So it had shorted completely out, and that's why I downed the truck, and we're going to take care of it right now. Not ideal timing, but when is ever a breakdown a good time? So you just make the best of it and go on.
Well, good luck with that, Patrick. Wise decision on your part. And if that had been doing it very long, it would cause you to use more fuel, too, because that's one whale of a load on an alternator. How big is the alternator on that? 400 or 500 amps?
70-amp alternator, but they use the battery reserve. That's why it's got two batteries to bring in and handle the extra load until the alternator can pick it back up and it cuts off.
Parallel. Now, are they making lithium? I'm sure they are, because my neighbor told me that's what he put in his boat. Of course, that's a different type, you know, different application. That would be deep cycle. But are they making lithium batteries for regular replacement in automobiles and such as your application now to give you a better life?
For HKX, not that I'm aware of, and the reason why would be because charging off an alternator, lithium batteries don't like that.
Right, now think about it, they do have a different profile. I remember talking to W4DJW about some of those lithium polymer ones for helicopters and that. Oh my, big fire hazard, really, really.
Reason I'm not sure I'd want to go to them either. But I could have converted my house batteries over to lithium, but I didn't just because of the expense.
What's batteries for?
Like a camper, the house batteries run everything in the box. Lights, the heater, they don't run the AC, the generator does that. and, you know, the computer, all that stuff.
So the house is on the back of the truck. Very interesting, Patrick. Always love to learn things. And diesels are not something I know a whole lot about. I used to see them change the heads and liners on those big locomotives that were, back then there was about 1,500 to 3,000 horsepower, and just marvel at the size of those suckers.
Other than, yeah, you're talking a V16 or, you know, huge cylinders.
I used to have to, well, I didn't very often, but if no one was available, they'd send me over to the railroad, and they had, from the old days of the steam locomotives, they were terribly, terribly heavy. They had a 250-ton crane, and it worked on DC. Man, that was an experience in old age stuff, Patrick, I'll tell you for sure. But they had, those things just weighed tons and tons and tons.
It took a lot of steel to build something like that.
I can't remember the weights on them. I'd be lying to you. But it was pretty incredible. If you figure that's a half a million pounds. That was the biggest one over there. And they did, that was a repair facility for that railroad for a long, long time. And I knew most of the guys that worked there in a small town. And my dad knew them all. And they'd all treat me like I was their own kid when I'd take my dad's lunch over there. And whether you can believe this or not, the Coke machine there, you'd get a bottle of Coca-Cola for a nickel.
I believe it. I don't remember those days, but I believe it. I've seen Coke machines with the sign on them, a nickel. So that was the good old days, right?
Very much so. And I heard him arguing there in front of the Coke machine one night. Everybody's in overalls standing around and jawing back and forth. And I said, what are you guys, bickering about? Well, they would bet whoever had, would lose would have to buy. And, you know, you're talking big money, a nickel. But they'd take their breaks there, I guess, at the same time. And if you looked on the bottom of the Coke bottles, they had the manufacturing plant. And the guy that had the manufacturing plant that was the furthest away, he won, or he lost. I don't know. I can't remember which one. But somebody had to buy that wasn't too happy about having to buy.
At least they kept it interesting, right?
I used to go over there and ride around with them on the engine. With my dad, when they'd take them out and turn them around at the turntable, that was fun. And then put them up on the right track and take them over and pull them up to the sanders and the fuel. And they'd fuel those things up. I think they took about 1,200 gallons of diesel, if I'm not mistaken. But that was a lot of fun. Here at the last, here comes an ambulance down here by GSP, headed my way. There at the last, my friend N5SD, Steve Draper, you know, he told me they all had glass cockpits, you know, like airliners, and that you had a challenge. A guy would come out of the engine, challenge you, and you'd have to give him the right password in order to board that engine. You couldn't even go on board it anymore. And by the way, our nephew, he just made captain. Yeah, he's been a co-pilot for many years on the 787. And yesterday he sent me a text. I'm supposed to get back home and call him. And he said, this is from Captain Webb. So that's quite a promotion.
That would be an honor to be the captain of an airliner.
The money to Patrick, and he started out flying C-130s for the Air National Guard, and went to Iraq in the first war, and then he had just started for American Airlines. Then he come back and he's worked for them since 1991. So he got a lot of seniority.
If you hear Matthew on here, WW4JET, that's what he is. He's a pilot for one of the airlines down there. He's on here quite a bit.
I'm telling you. Back then, I remember reading a manual, and I think Steve had it. I don't know, but he was just starting out. But a full-blown captain on a 747 was, I think, $200,000+ a year. And that was back in 1991.
Chunk of money back then, for sure. Still a nice chunk today, but it don't buy you near as much.
It was in the 400s now. Steve never says. You can look it up online, I'm sure, but I never do. Doesn't matter. He's still a farm boy from Kansas, as far as I'm concerned. But he did some alterations on this young lady, beautiful young lady, that lives across from my daughter, our daughter. And come to find out, talking to her mom, I asked her what her husband done, and her husband flies the Gulfstream, I forget what the number on it is, one of the newest ones for Coca-Cola Company. I bet that pays pretty good, too. Gulfstream is about the highest dollar personal jet that anyone can have. I know a lot of people don't know, you know, about the different ones. I worked on Lear jets for about 3 months before I got laid off out in Wichita. Back then, they were $624,000. And now, those Gulfstreams and that are up in the $20, $30 million range.
Something the other day where you could buy you one of the retired 737s, I believe it was, for like $6 million. But then you'd have to do all the upgrades and everything to it.
Afford the fuel, let alone anything else, for one of them suckers. I forget what that 787 takes, but they'll fly straight from Dallas, Texas, all the way to the South Pacific, down into Hong Kong. Steve used to fly to South Korea a lot, Indonesia, nonstop out of Dallas. That means you got to go across half the United States before you even get to the ocean. That's just amazing.
The range they got on them. It's amazing what they've learned to do with those jet engines and what they're getting out of them nowadays.
It's N0TR. Yeah, that, I was trying to think what that, I don't know, was it a 9X? It was over 100,000 pounds of thrust. And so you can take an airplane weighing 100,000 pounds and fly it straight up like a rocket, I think is what they're saying there. But they're over that. And those are like on the 777, 787, and the big Airbuses. Steve's always flown Boeing planes. But I think they take on about 50,000 gallons of fuel or something like that. Have to look it up. That's totally amazing that something that weighs close to 1 million pounds can get off the ground, you know what? The 747s do weigh up in that area.
It's amazing what you can do with physics. But, Tom, I'm getting close to where I'm going to destinate, so I'm going to go ahead and get out of here. But good to talk to you today, and hope you and Miss Bernice have a good weekend, and hope she gets to feeling better. KO4HKX, and I'll be clear for now. 7-3.
There's something with this knee, Patrick, and we appreciate your concerns, and I'll get her fixed up one way or the other. Next time I tell her she's going to doctor, she's going to doctor. Hard-headed Germans, I'm telling you. You can take them off the farm, but you can't take the farm out of them. 7-3 is Patrick. Have a great day. 204-HKX in 0TR.